back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is Max Hoffman, a policy analyst on the National Security International Policy Team at the Center for American Progress, where he focuses on Turkey and the Kurdish regions, U.S. defense budgeting and policy, and the intersection of climate change, human migration, and security concerns. He has organized and undertaken repeated research trips to Turkey, Iraq, and Lebanon. Welcome to Background Briefing, Max Hoffman.
Thanks, Ian. Good to be with you.
Well, thanks, Max. And what did you make of the meeting today at the White House between President Trump and President Erdogan, who's just won a referendum, very disputed, but of course Donald Trump was about the only, I think, certainly the first important Western leader to congratulate Erdogan, essentially leaving half the Turkish population high and dry who didn't vote for him, who were not happy with this power grab. So let's start with that. I mean, what do you think is the motive for Trump being nice to this guy in that way that in effect undercuts all of the educated and urban Turks who are feeling the brunt of this purge that is underway as thousands are arrested and lose their jobs?
Well, you're certainly right that the visit comes in the context of, a severe degradation in U.S.-Turkish relations. The relationship's probably the worst it's been since the 1970s when we actually had an arms embargo on Turkey. And in the context of a very, very concerning authoritarian drift in Turkey. As you mentioned, Erdogan has consolidated control of the country. He just pushed through this very controversial referendum. And there were, several voting irregularities, and of course the whole election was conducted in the midst of severe crackdown on opposition media and politicians. But Trump, he didn't, as you mentioned, he didn't seem to really mind any of that. He called to congratulate Erdogan. He was one of the first to do so. He actually did so after the State Department had issued a statement in conjunction with European government saying that they were waiting for the official certification of the results before commenting, and Trump picked up the phone to call Tayyip Erdogan and congratulate him. But it's really not surprising. It's in keeping with the Trump administration's policy thus far. It's extremely realistic and interest-based. Trump has had this sort of strange obsession with dictators, whether it's Fatah al-Sisi from Egypt or Rodrigo Duterte from the Philippines, and of course Erdogan and Putin. So it's in keeping with this approach. The meetings at the White House are ongoing, but the initial joint statement was both men were full of praise for the other. Both sort of used flattery as a tactic because they both believed the other to be vulnerable to that sort of thing. So Trump praised Turkish martial prowess. He praised Erdogan's strength, and Erdogan in return congratulated Trump on what he called his legendary election triumph, which I'm sure is catnip to the president.
Certainly, that does sound like something that would win over Trump, since he seems to be so obsessed with, he keeps repeating that his legendary Electoral College win. But of course, in 2015, Trump was interviewed by Breitbart News by none other than Stephen Bannon, who became his strategic advisor, when he talked about his conflict of interest with lots of business family holdings in Turkey, quoting Trump, "I have a little conflict of interest because I have a major building in Istanbul." So that's a pretty naked admission that maybe there is some reason why he's being nice to this fellow. But on the other hand, Erdogan is asking for the impossible, isn't he? He wants the U.S. to extradite Gulen, who's in exile. He has a green card, lives in the United States. And also he wants the U.S. to cut its ties with the YPG, the Syrian Kurdish militias, who are the only boots on the ground that the Pentagon have been able to find that could actually take on the Islamic State. And they're poised for a major offensive to capture Raqqa. And to do so, they require a lot of heavy equipment from the United States. And that, of course, is the main bone of contention, right?
That's absolutely right. The top priority for Erdogan on this visit was to try and get Trump and the U.S. government to reconsider the decision to conduct the final push on Raqqa with the Kurdish forces, or majority Kurdish forces, referred to as the SDF, the Syrian Democratic Forces, or the YPG, variously. Turkey, of course, regards these guys as a terrorist organization, but the Pentagon strongly believes that they're the only group capable of retaking Raqqa on any acceptable time frame. You know, Raqqa, of course, is a source of terrorist threats emanating out to Europe and, of course, most directly to Turkey. So it should really be in everyone's interest. Turkey, or the Turkish government, doesn't view it that way. Of course, they see the development of a Kurdish statelet on their southern border in northern Syria as a threat to their security. And they've been, you know, they've been very resistant to cooperating with the U.S. in northern Syria on this set of issues. That's by far the top priority. There is next to no chance Erdogan will get his way there. The U.S. is moving forward with the Kurds, and that's that. So he'll be looking for concessions on that front. And the likely concessions are increased intelligence sharing on the PKK, the domestic Turkish-Kurdish separatist group. Assurances about the future governance in northern Syria, that it will not be exclusively Kurdish or exclusively leftist Kurdish governed, that Arabs and Turkmen will have a say. And then also in northern Iraq, there is significant controversy surrounding the Sinjar area and Turkish concerns that both the Kurds and indirectly Iran will have too much influence in northern Iraq moving forward. So Trump may offer concessions on those things. On Gulen, the other major issue you mentioned, you know, the Turks have been demanding his extradition since the coup attempt, which they believe Gulen orchestrated. They haven't presented any evidence to the U.S. government that has stood up to scrutiny. And I don't think Trump can afford to provoke another, you know, constitutional crisis. Extradition process is governed by the judicial system, by the judges, in this case in eastern Pennsylvania, and the Justice Department. Trump can't short-circuit that even if he wanted to. So on the two major issues, as you said, there are really no wins for Erdogan here. You also mentioned the conflict of interest, which, you know, it's a very important issue. You mentioned the towers in Istanbul, and Trump and his family received up to $5 million a year, received currently up to $5 million a year in income from those properties, according to his very incomplete financial disclosure. The other big conflict here is Michael Flynn, the departed, you know, fired national security advisor. He was a paid agent indirectly of the Turkish government through a businessman very close to the Turkish government. And at the time, he was making extremely important strategic decisions on behalf of the United States regarding Turkey. It was a direct conflict of interest. In fact, the reason we are still, you know, the U.S. and Turkey are still arguing over the YPG announcement is because Flynn, during the transition, rejected the Obama administration's offer to make the announcement and therefore give Trump and Flynn a clean start with the Turkish government. He said, no, we might reexamine this decision. But at the time, he was a paid agent of the Turkish government. So it's an extremely troubling conflict of interest that really deserves more scrutiny.
Well, you have to take it a little further, don't you, Max Hoffman? I mean, the FBI apparently have hanging over Flynn, who's trying to make a deal and says he's got a story to tell, or at least his lawyer says that. Flynn apparently met with representatives from Erdogan and promised that somehow he could kidnap Gulen and have him renditioned, I guess is the word, to Turkey. I mean, that's pretty amazing. I mean, and the source on that, of course, is the former head of the CIA, Jim Woolsey. You said he came in the meeting later, but that's what the meeting was about. That's pretty explosive, isn't it?
It is. I mean, one can only hope that these were, you know, sort of crazy ideas being thrown around and not seriously, right. Because, you know, the very idea is just shocking. Right. But, I mean, listen, the overall context here, you know, it's being overshadowed because this administration is struggling to extract itself from these various conflicts, which everyone, you know, had been warning about for months and months and months, even before the election. But the more important, or the equally important issue here is the relationship with this key NATO ally in Turkey and what's happened domestically in Turkey. This is, you know, the Obama administration tried to balance. We have very important, the U.S. has very important strategic interests in Turkey and with Turkey in the region. The Obama administration tried to balance some of those military security concerns with at least voicing criticism or warnings to Turkey about their domestic crackdown and this authoritarian drift under Erdogan. They didn't always say enough in the eyes of their critics about democracy in Turkey or human rights, but they at least balanced it a little bit. This new administration, the Trump administration, though, has really jettisoned any concern for human rights or democracy. The problem there is that Turkey can't be a reliable long-term ally of the United States and a reliable NATO ally if it continues this, you know, highly nationalistic and anti-democratic drift. So, you know, I think we should all hope that the set of issues expands moving forward, or we could be in for a bumpy road.
But just to focus on the personality, since this man has such an unbridled ego, and he built this massive palace for himself in Ankara, there are certain analogies with Vladimir Putin, who, when he first came into power, you recall George W. Bush looked into his eyes and saw his soul. There was a period when he seemed to be at least going along with the vestiges of democracy in Russia, and then quickly turned to kleptocracy and autocracy, which is what Erdogan's doing. I mean, he started out with zero problems with neighbors. Well, you know, he did very well for a while. The AKP became very popular, and there were real reforms and real economic progress, and then he sort of turned into an autocrat and a kleptocrat. So do you detect a kind of comparison there?
There are echoes of the story in Russia. I don't think Turkey's there yet, and I think that the Turkish society is extremely diverse. They have a very vibrant middle class. Its ties to Europe are deep, particularly the economic ties, which the Turkish economy relies on. And Turkish civil society and the opposition are still there. I mean, as you mentioned, he barely won this recent referendum, but essentially 50% of the country, including the three largest cities, voted against the proposed constitutional changes to hand Erdogan more power. He still got it, and the provisions will allow him to expand near absolute control, I would say, over the judiciary, which is extremely troubling. He'll be able to name the whole cabinet and pass budgets without parliament. He could dissolve parliament, although that will also send the presidency to an election, so there's a disincentive there. I mean, he has tremendous power. He's by far the dominant force in Turkish politics. But I think long-term, Turkey has perhaps a little bit more resiliency. It's not a resource-based extraction economy the way Russia is with energy. And Turkish democracy, despite its many shortcomings and challenges, has deeper roots. And so I think that, combined with its ties to Europe, its reliance on European investment, and the way it's rooted in the Western security architecture through NATO, hopefully will avoid the absolute worst outcome. But it's an extremely concerning situation, and Turkish democracy is certainly on life support, and it needs all the help it can get from the U.S. and Europe. And unfortunately, we're everybody is fairly distracted these days with internal problems. So it's a worrying situation.
Well, Max Hoffman, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Oh, thank you very much, Ian. Take care.
You too. And again, I've been speaking with Max Hoffman, who's a policy analyst on the National Security and International Policy team at the Center for American Progress, where he focuses on Turkey and the Kurdish region's U.S. defense budgeting and policy and the intersection of climate change, human migration, and security concerns. He's organized and undertaken repeated research trips to Turkey, Iraq, and Lebanon. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back discussing a comparison that the United States ambassador to the UN has made between the Assad regime and the Nazis.